Let's talk about the Chris Ryan thing. I've watched it. I think it's really good. You know, I think it's the best contemporary drama I've ever seen on Sky. I mean,
oh, good. That's good.
That's how they call it. No, but it is. I mean, I thought it was really good.
Better than Pineapple Dance Studios. Really?
Pineapple Dance Studios.
Not as much drama as that. I mean, I think you meant.
If you
cast it's not as heart stopping, is it, as Pineapple Dance Studios?
No, I mean, you haven't got the sort of leg movements, or does that come later in there?
I tried as I was sprinting across the desert.
So what could, drew you to this project? What was it about it? I mean,
It repelled me when I first read it, because I thought, ah, come on, another war drama, another kind of boys with guns, big explosions, yeah, I've seen it all before. And then I thought, actually, go back and look at it again, look at this character, and see if it's an opportunity to kind of reinvent that, which I thought it was. And I thought, you know, it's a contemporary writer, it's written by somebody that isn't a novelist, that was actually, you know, an operative, and I'd read Bravo 20 years and years and years ago, and so I sort of knew that team, and I thought, actually, this man's been on the inside of this, so whether or not he's written a good book, I wasn't really interested in. I thought, you know, he's got the bones of a good character, so it was actually the character that I was attracted to, and I think that the subsequent writers of the series were also attracted to the characters more than the single storyline. So I think, and the thing about being attracted to that character was, you know, a very simple premise of a man that makes a decision in a moment of extremis. That decision has a knock-on effect on his whole life. He goes in search of atonement, still believing that he made the right decision, despite the fact that three of his friends died. And I think that living with that sense of, hang on, I did the right thing, I made the right decision, I did the right thing, but why was the outcome so wrong? And I think that sort of simple premise takes the character through six episodes, and probably further. I think there's a potential to have, because that's a fundamental question about an individual in a state of, you know, in a place of war. You know, can the individual mind, conscience, compassion work in that environment when you're trained to be a killing machine? Can you then function as a human being, a man with feelings and a family and a child and a wife? And, you know, how do you suppress that and just go out and kill without thought?
And and can a man make those decisions under those conditions? Or is it, what did you kill away from?
I kind of came away thinking that it's sort of impossible on an individual level. I think it's possible on mass. You know, when you think of an army that are conditioned not to think as individuals, I think it's possible. But this person, you know, at ground level, the people are individuals. And therefore, I think that the notion of human being being part of a military force is actually a paradox that will never be solved.
Of course. Yeah. And did you feel that you had to live up to this character? I mean, it's imbued with Chris Ryan, isn't it? Was that a part of the challenge of it?
Yeah, and actually, I kind of wanted him to be better than I was. I wanted him to be the kind of bloke that I'd like to be, even with all the flaws. And I kind of admire the flaws in him, and I admire the tenacity for standing up and saying, no, I made a mistake. I'm going to take the consequences, but I'm going to search out the reasons why it was a mistake. I'm going to question this. And I can't rest until I do. And I kind of admired that in the character and the fact.
Quite a bit of anger, isn't there, driving it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's anger. It's also it's complete injustice as well. I think when he's so strongly. I mean, in a way, he's quite he's quite alpha male in that way. He's quite black and white. That, you know, I did the right thing. The wrong outcome happened. You know, that should not have happened. Why did that happen? I don't think that he was able to assimilate him.
He got the hostage out.
Yeah, he got the result, but he lost his family. He lost his daughter. He lost his wife.
I thought the family's a bit tough on him, aren't they? Really,
his wife. There was one line I'd never heard.
Okay, off we go.
Yeah. Well, I saw the marriage kind of breaking down, and then there's a line later on when he goes AWOL and she says, you know, we're all better off without him, and I was like, gosh, I'd never read that. I'm really shocked. And I got in, actually in the screening, being quite upset for John, because he'd been abandoned like that. But I think after years and years and years of that kind of lifestyle, that life, you know, maybe to be an army wife and raising a child, I think it must be absolutely exhausting.
Mm.
And that knock on the door, you know, always.
That must be awful. And yeah. Who did you meet and talk to sort of develop the character and stuff?
I didn't actually get access to Chris because he came on as a developer with the writers. I had three SAS guys that were there the whole time we were shooting. Wow. And they were South African SAS and another guy who was in
They better all British. Work around a lot.
They're all different.
Are they?
But in a similar way to surgeons that do the same operation, but they all take different routes in. Mm. Same with the SAS. They've all got. That was what was brilliant about it, because you could say, okay, here's the book. This is what you do by the book. But in reality, this is what happens. And having those people, so that you know we're setting up a situation where we sort of. You know, the hostage taken in the beginning of episode one, and they'd say, well, this is what the book says you do, but however, look at the shape of this door, look at this corridor, there's no way you can do that, so we're going to bend it around this location. Brilliant. So, I mean, it was
so
fantastic.
So that was sort of reconstructing the plot,
totally.
As it were, the mechanics
step,
of it.
Step by step, and they were there. They were there kind of saying, no, you can't do that, you can't move across the room like that, you know, there's a door here, you can't do that, you can't. The three men won't do that, and this is what you would do. So,
did that make it more difficult to actually do it, though?
It was always a kind of a negotiation with what was going to look good on camera and what was absolutely realistic. And so we always found a happy medium. But luckily, Daniel Percival, who was writer-director, he wanted it as real. He wanted it real. He wanted the, you know, people that do this for a living to sit down and watch this and go, yes, that's how it's done.
Gosh, that's a high standard. It was most of the audience went one way or the other, wasn't it?
No, and actually... we had two different directors. Obviously, we got a director coming on board at the end, and Daniel was very efficient with the amount of rounds that were pulled off. You know, when you double tap somebody, that's it. You don't, you know, fire at will. Whereas the second director, it's much more kind of. It feels much more American in its style. But I mean, they both stand up against each other, but it was a noticeable difference.
I suppose less professional to fire feel rounds, is it?
It's the more efficient you are, the less rounds you use. But then, you know, the second director was in a totally different environment. It wasn't a military operation; it was a solo operation.
Yeah, I see, right.
So, yeah, there was a bit more license to.
But you must have picked up and learned so much about this sort of stuff.
I did. I mean, I kind of feel like I've scratched the surface there. That's why I want to go back and do more, because. Yeah, it did get to the point of when you first start and you first pick up the weapon and you first get all the gear on and you think, I feel like Richard Armitage inside a ridiculous costume. But then, sort of a few weeks into the shoot, I suddenly started going, oh, "Where's my gun? I couldn't work without my weapon. I needed it there." And then once I had it, I was like, "Okay." And they'd come and take it off you between takes, and I'd be like, "Actually, no. Can I just kind of hang on to it?" It just felt like an extension of my arm, really. So, it didn't take long to. I suppose because I was pretty much working every day, so I was living with the character. And when you're away from home and working late like that, because we were working long days, you kind of don't ever leave the character. So I started to dream as the character at night, which was really annoying. I was like, God, get out of my head, please. There was an episode which is set in a prison, which is episodes 2, 3, and 4. And I was having all these prison escape dreams because there's a whole sequence where they break out through this hole in the wall and they go down through these tunnels, and night after night I was sort of dreaming how they escape. It was just endless. So I was doing it in the day and then get home at night and I still couldn't get out. Yeah.
And have you ever played anything like similar to this before? It's a little bit different. I mean, there's action, of course, but this is a real...
Yeah, I think I've touched on it occasionally, but never on this scale. Yes, it's interesting because in a way John feels like the alter ego of Lucas North. Lucas is the controlled MI5,
yes,
blah blah blah, and in a way John is like the weapon. He's the one that's out there in the field, and I quite liked the fact that I was going to play the other side of of this world, of this intelligence world.
Harden up Lucas, though. Is it going to make it easier?
It's certainly. It's interesting coming back to this side.
They are quite close characters. Are they going to affect each other if they don't carry on in respective series?
It's interesting because I think if
you know, they'll meld into one. Or
well, I worried about that because they are, you know, they are quite close in subject matter. But then the idea of putting Lucas and John in the same room together, sitting them down, and then I suddenly thought that these guys are nothing like each other. They wouldn't.
It's a Harry Hill moment.
Yeah, I mean, John would think Lucas was an absolute wanker, and Lucas would be like, "Go away and shoot your guns, and let me kind of be the thinking man." And so, actually, yeah, the idea of them coming together and John would take Lucas down in a fight like that.
Really?
Yeah. Because he knows all.
So which
all
one
the
is closest to Richard? Then I mean, that's never.
That's a good one. Probably Lucas, actually. Probably. Well, that's because I've probably lived with him for a bit longer, so he feels closer, but John feels like a slightly uncontrollable child at the moment that I'm trying to rein in and still having fun with him a bit.
And so where would it go if there was another series? I mean, is there another book?
Go anywhere.
Really? So does he end up with a sort of unit at the end, or is he just still on his own?
No, at the end of the series, he's driving off into Iran. He's crossing the border.
Really?
Into Iran. Yeah, he's gone AWOL. And the
that's a great
Toby Stevens is going, get him, hunt him down.
Really?
Yeah. With the most amazing crane shot, and you've got this. The camera starts in the back of the car, and the Land Rover drives through the landscape, and then it gradually pulls up into a helicopter shot, and the landscape just gets wider and wider, and the car just disappears, and you think, okay, that's why we went to South Africa, because it's just massive. It's a massive shot. Yeah.
Gosh, well, that sounds encouraging. Yeah. That's enough. I've heard series based on less than that.
Yeah. No, I'd love to go and do more. And you really could take. You could go anywhere.
And so you're happy to keep playing these two. I'm talking about these series together, as it were. But it doesn't trouble you as an actor to play two reasonably close characters.
It's my job to try and make them different.
Yeah,
it's my pleasure as an actor to be employed. There you go. How's that for an answer?
It's good.
Seriously, in a year that I think has been disastrous for drama, last year I think I'd be surprised if any of the channels have got anything to show this year, next year, because all the drama budgets got cut. You know, Channel 4 didn't spend anything. BBC had to, seriously rein it in. I don't think it's always a bad thing, because I think it forces writing into a concentrated nugget of interesting stuff. Although it's small, it's a small amount of drama. But Sky with a guy spending money on stuff and being ambitious, and I think it's commendable, really.
And do you think things have picked up from where you're sitting?
I think there's a fresh sort of. Is almost like a slight sigh of relief, and I think it has to go through that, though. I think there has to be a slight kind of pause where people go, hang on a minute, and then, right, now we know what we're doing. I think because of ITV and that they got very close to going under, and I think it, everyone was running scared
from contemporary drama anyway.
Yeah.
To me, I mean.
But Channel 4 as well.
Channel 4, I don't know what's going on.
But they were making some great stuff, and I think everyone gets scared and they think, shit, it's the end. And then I think once you've had that moment where you think, okay, if we are going to make something, we've got to make something really good, rather than going, well, yeah, we've got loads of money to spend, let's just make loads of rubbish. I think it has
effect. I just read a bit on broadcast. Ben Stevenson says he's got 200 million to spend next year.
Yeah.
Blimey. Yeah. That's 200 out. Well,
yeah, that's
probably more than 200.
Jonathan Ross's fee, isn't it? No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Yeah. No, it's great. And yeah, they've got, I think that Sky have basically pushed everyone else to sort of think, hang on a minute, God, we've got to really work hard. And I really like the fact that, because I work for both, I work for BBC, I work for Sky now, and I like the fact that It's competition, but it's competition that breeds, good television making.
Yeah, absolutely. So you didn't think, this is a great respect to Sky, that I'm going to do a drama and potentially I might get a fraction of the audience that I would otherwise get on, your former terrestrial channel.
Yeah, I suppose I No, I didn't. I didn't think about audience at all. I just thought about whether I wanted to do it or not, whether it was a piece I wanted to do, and I kind of always feel like that. It's not really about, you know, I'd be happy to, and have done, you know, theatre where you play to an audience of 20. It's still worth playing if it's worth playing, and it's a different kind of audience. I think the Sky's audience are much more selective. You don't just stick the TV on and it just happens to come onto the screen. No. I think you have to choose a lot more, and you have to, you know, there's so much to choose from. You have to really filter it. I know this now because I've got Sky.
And give
I'm like, wow, God, look, all this to watch. What do I watch? But you do. You get really specific, and I think people in general are watching TV in a completely different way.
Yeah,
even this year on Spooks, when I see episode one and I see what the ambition is for episode one, it's like a feature film. You know, it's a big cargo ship and explosions and la 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 out of Tangiers, and you know, people have got massive televisions now. I think they sort of switch the lights out and watch television like cinema.
Yeah.
And that's why it was interesting at the screening, seeing this hold up on a big screen, and all the commercial breaks, which were sort of moments where the screen went black, actually became sort of like pauses in music. And it wasn't till the end that I thought, ah, they were the commercial breaks. Thank God there were no commercials. Can you imagine having to sit through kind of Jacob's Cream Crackers in the middle of Strike Back? But there were moments where you kind of gathered your breath and then carried on with the next bit. And I thought, God, that's a really interesting, you know, device. I'll use that when I'm a filmmaker.
Would you like to be one?
Yeah, I think so. Either a filmmaker or a producer. Can't do this for the rest of my life, can I? Come on.
Really? I don't know.
Oh, come on.
You're doing pretty well, Adam, mate. I mean, why would you not want to? We're getting lead roles in big dramas.
But once you get comfortable, you've got to move on, haven't you? You've got to shake it up. I'm not comfortable yet. I haven't explored everything that I want to do, but yeah.
What about, America? I thought, you know, there's been a drift, hasn't there, of lots of talent towards America.
Yeah, there have. That's probably why I'm working, because all the good actors have gone to America.
I'll put that in definitely.
It's true.
Richard has all his success too.
To the fact that everyone's bugging off to America.
Great.
Right.
Who else can we get rid of?
What job doesn't Rupert Henry Jones want to do now? I'll have it. I'll do it.
Look what we can do.
No, I think it's
so
great.
So have any offers been coming in from those quarters?
No, nothing.
No film? No film offers? No?
No, I think I send out messages that I'm always employed, which is a good thing. But yeah, maybe the end of this year, I think I might go have a sniff around, and then come back and start work again at home.
I mean, this particular role would be, you know, it's a great sort of advertisement for a type of film. That Americans do like, don't they?
Yeah,
action true. Hero, as it were. I mean.
You're right, but I feel like it's weird because, you know, people say, well, you know, you could go do a big American series, you know, like Strike Back, and it's like, well, I'm kind of doing it already, but it's just not, you know, this will probably sell to America, it will probably transfer to America, but it's like I'm kind of playing the role that I want. I would be surprised if I'd get that kind of chance in America. I think I might have to go back and do 6 lines in a movie. I'd happily do that. I'm not proud, but I've got very used to creating a whole character.
Yeah.
You know, from beginning to end. And sometimes when you have to step in and do 6 lines, it's not that satisfying. But I'd still.
No, interestingly, they've become the sort of the film industry in a way, haven't they? You know, big series with, you know, big story arcs and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's interesting the amount of big names that are moving now into American television because you can kind of carve out a character, you know, look at something like Damages. And
do you think you've got more, as an actor, you've got more influence over the way the character develops in these series than you do in the film? Is it more done and dusted in the film?
I don't, to be honest, because I haven't played a lead character in a film, I don't know. I'm suspecting that there's probably more time to develop your character, whereas a film, you know, you've got, I suppose, yeah, because I'm planning a, well, I'm hoping up to, I've got a script in development which isn't mine, but it's about Richard III, and it keeps kind of getting moved around into, you know, can we do this in 2.5 hours? Should we make a film? There's too much to tell. Let's do 20 episodes. Yeah. And then you think, yeah, and then we can tell all of the story and we can let the character go from 16 to, you know.
But with you playing Richard?
Maybe. I might end up being too old by the time it goes into production. I might have to play Warwick, but I might not be able to do any of it. I might have to stand back. And
it's, as a film or as...
Well, again, we don't know.
Don't know.
It's too much to fit into a film. You'd have to make three films, and I don't know whether there's enough interest to make three films out of that, but we think
I'm
fascinated
already.
Yeah, it might. I think it might go into a sort of 20-episode sort of long-running Wars of the Roses kind of thing.
Really? Well, Tudors did very well.
Yeah. And this is the prequel to the Tudors, so,
yeah, so
it's just trying to get someone interested, you know, because I know a lot of people that are interested, but there's no one that will step on the gas and... Quite. Nearly there.
Very interesting. Now tell me about this sort of legion of fans you've got. I mean, you've got this...
You're not hearing them. They're outside now. Oh, look, there's another pair of pants hitting the window.
I mean, is it all apocryphal? Do they exist? This,
I think so. Yeah.
Are they the Armitage Army?
Yeah.
Have you come into contact with these people?
Yeah, they kind of turn up at... things. I think I'd probably have, if I'd done a bit more theatre, then I probably would have a bit more contact.
Yeah.
But yeah, they all kind of show up occasionally, write nice letters.
They're
very supportive. Yeah.
Are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Men, women.
Mainly women. Mainly middle-aged, quite well-educated Radio 4 listeners, I'd say. They all kind of came from north and south, and then gradually I've picked up a different sort of audience with all the different types of. I mean, I've done quite a few genres now. I've kind of done a bit of children's television. You know, Robin Hood was aimed at young people, and then, you know, this is...
Very good character.
Thanks. This is hopefully going to go for a slightly different audience.
Yeah, no,
I think they'll disapprove of this one.
Well, there's a bit of sort of... Well, yeah. I've only seen episode one, but how does the love interest develop in this? He's not a romantic hero, though, is he?
Not in the same way as some of the other characters that I've played. I think it's less focused on that. It's more focused on, you know, the boys kind of atonement together.
And as an actor, which do you like playing the best? Because that seems like quite a divide in what you do. You do the romantic hero, and you also do this.
You know what? When you're playing that kind of character, you long to get on a motorbike or grab a gun and have a run around and just punch somebody. And then when you're doing the punching, you long to sort of sit in a cravat in a bumpy carriage on a road with a horse. You know, you always kind of want one or the other.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I suppose I try and bring a little bit of this cerebral kind of there's a thinking feel, touchy feely thing about. Romantic hero that I've tried to push in through John, and then likewise in the romantic hero with Guy of Gisborne trying to give him a slightly steely edge, and I like mixing it up so that
and so what next? I suppose you'll
more of this maybe a play next year. A comedy.
Please, a comedy. Please. Is that what you're appealing for a comedy?
Yeah, I think it's time to lighten up. I think some reviewer said sour-faced Richard Armitage, and I suddenly thought, you know what, you're right, I am pretty sour-faced the whole time. Maybe I'm hoping to do the Rover, Afro Ben's play.
Yeah.
Probably halfway through next year. It'll be a little romp in the woods kind of.
Yeah, oh, very good.
That'd be nice.
And then Spooks goes on, doesn't it? I mean, do you know how the series ends? Are we on another cliffhanger here?
I don't know. I said to them, take it where you will. If it's the deep fat fryer for me, then so be it.
I do like the churn rate. It's just about right in Spooks. I've often thought.
Yeah.
Although Harry is still around, but you know.
Yeah, I think the show would die without Harry. If they decided to kill Harry, they'd finally have to make Spooks the movie, which every time I see the executives, Jane and Simon, I keep saying, okay, when are you going to make the movie? Because, you know, like they did with X-Files.
Yes, yeah.
This Spooks would make such a good movie.
It would actually, yeah. But then, as we were saying earlier, sometimes it's better than a film, though, isn't it? Because, you know...
Yeah.
Although the series where they had the big overarching story didn't actually work as
yeah.
well. I didn't think.
Not with his, not without your story of the week. But I think if they found the definitive spook storyline, then they could. Mm. But again, there isn't one. Maybe something about the Olympics. I don't know.
Yeah. Marvellous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.